Hey guys, I'm Jordan Prince. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. This is my lovely band from right here in Germany. We have some nice folk songs for you tonight. So, Frank, why don't you kick us off?
Welcome back to another episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. I'm your host, Jordan Prince. We're here in the M94.5 studios in Munich. Today we have a fantastic songwriter and a lovely gentleman, David Gaffney. Okay, David Gaffney, just to be 100% sure that we have the right one, we just want to make sure you're not the David Gaffney who writes truly 21st century stories for a fragmented world and stories for a fragmented and fragmenting world, which are short, snappy, and utterly addictive?
No.
That's not you. Okay.
Not me.
Just wanted to be totally clear we had the right one. We've had too many imposters in here in the past.
I've often thought we should collaborate, me and this guy.
That would be kind of fun.
It'd be pretty funny, no?
What would you call it? Like David's Gaffneys?
D-Gaff squared or something. I don't know. I don't know. We could figure something out, I'm sure.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. We have the David Gaffney who, were you born and raised in Liverpool?
No, I was actually born in Jersey in the Channel Islands.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. How did you end up in Liverpool from there?
I moved from Jersey to London and then with a friend or like a band member, we decided to just take a venture to Liverpool because we heard it was good times there.
How old were you at that time?
I was around 22
or
something
okay.
like that. Yeah. So me and my friend Joey, we decided to take the guitars from London, from Camden Town, to Liverpool. Yeah.
Does Liverpool have this vibe in the same way that like Melbourne does in Australia, where you see this as like a music hub? Where you want to go?
It really had a big effect on me, the city, because the Beatles thing
sure.
is still alive and kicking there, and you don't actually realize until you go there how much it's still
really
still a part of it. Yeah, and the Matthew Street where the Cavern Club is and things like this, and me and my friend just decided, hey, we just start making some music there, you know?
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah, we had a super successful first evening there. And
then
I think it was like the first £100 we ever made or something. And it was like, okay, where's the beer, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But we really had like a positive introduction to the city. And then, yeah, and then after that, we met loads of people there and... Yeah, good vibes there.
I feel like cities like that, like Liverpool or like New York or Melbourne or something, or New Orleans, for my example, it's just like when you have so many creative people in one place, it's so easy to make new friends and say, oh, you're going to do this. Okay, can I hop on that project? Do you need someone for that?
That's it, yeah.
Even if you don't really know how to do what they need, you're like, I can do that. And then you learn it on the way.
Yeah, and it's and also Liverpool is a super small city.
How many people live there?
I would be taking a wild guess.
I think we're going to fact check that later.
But you soon find out who the music crowd are. And it's like you do a few open mics and then...
552,267.
Okay, now I know that. Now I have to keep that in the head.
That's almost the exact same population as New Orleans.
Okay.
We did an interview with a friend of mine who is from Spain but moved there to do music. And we had to also Google the same thing. You learn the people so quickly. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's the
chance. It's not nearly the same, Jordan.
Okay, but that's not greater New Orleans. Okay, it's saying 393,000, but that's inner city.
Up, no?
Come on, guys. but yeah, you learn pretty quickly, like, okay, there's the jazz guys, that's the rock guys, this is the folk guys, and they blend sometimes.
Yeah,
or how was it for you? I don't know.
Well, because we were coming from like a kind of living on Camden High Street, around this era of like Amy Winehouse was still like running around bars there.
Oh, shit.
Peter Doherty and all of these people were kind of in the same like pubs as you. So we
that's wild.
We were kind of just going out there without a care in the world with the guitars and thinking, hey, we're going to go and make it. whatever it was at the time.
Right.
And then we soon found out when you want to earn a living down there in London,
right,
it's quite difficult, you know, because it's a bit of a shark's pool. And
exactly, yeah.
And there's so much going on there. And then Liverpool was like this kind of new lease of life. Everyone was talking to each other, like the people in like the coffee shops or the fish and chip shops would come out when you're busking and say, hey lad, do you want some chips or
nice,
coffee and stuff? And for us, it was a massive change.
So it's very communal.
Like yeah, super caring people. Also straight to the point as well, kind of, they don't mess around with the opinions and stuff like that, but you know what you get, and yeah, what you see is what you get there.
Man, it's really, you can't take that for granted. That kind of thing is really nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's yeah, for me, it's priceless, especially when you're doing music or something, because mm-hmm. if you're kind of going around to different bars or different clubs, and the manager or something, he's cool and he's saying straight away, yeah, I'll give you a show. Whereas they're not going to mess around. The ones that don't like you will kind of, yeah, make it, hey, it's not really our kind of thing here, or, mm-hmm. or something like that.
Man. Well, actually, speaking of busking, so you were busking in Liverpool. And just, can you explain what busking is for listeners who might not know what that is?
But busking is just street music.
Street music, right? Yeah.
Or some form of art on the street.
Like playing for passersby, for the hat or something.
Yeah.
And how long did you busk? Like, were you also busking in London and busking in Liverpool?
Yeah, well, it kind of, I from when I was like 18 or something, I went to Brighton from Jersey.
And we just went to Brighton in March. Yeah, we played a show there, the Great Escape Festival. Oh,
amazing place.
That's a great city, man.
Amazing place.
Brighton's so beautiful and fun.
And I started doing a little bit there, but wasn't too confident with it at that time. It was more like, I was going to the Brighton lanes like maybe around 11 p.m. or something, and just kind of hiding in the dark there and kind of playing some of my own material. Mm-hmm. And then, a year or two later, then I said, I was back in Jersey, and then I said, hey, let's go to London and just put the guitar out down on Covent Garden and and start there, you know?
Did you ever have any situations where you ran into like people claiming their own busking territories? Because in New Orleans, it's a bit like that. They're like, hey man, that's my bench.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I think like obviously every city's different, and London in the Covent Garden area and things like this, if someone has the amp down, you can be sure that they have a super long life battery and they're not bloody moving, you know? Yeah. And they're a bit fiery there. But again, I think it's like the same with everything. No, different cities, different people. And also if you meet their kind of, if you meet their behavior with good positive vibes, it's very rarely that it's going to continue like this kind of fighty thing.
Right.
So I would always try and bring it down anyway and say, hey, look, I'm not trying to tread on your doorstep, or I don't want any problems. And it was always kind of dealt with pretty quickly. And then you end up like kind of like working with the people then.
Oh, man.
And like, hey, do you fancy holding the spot down like 6 until 8? I'm coming at 8. Don't leave the spot until 8 because I'm going to get there 8 till 10 then.
Oh my God.
And then you start having like the WhatsApp groups of like who's here and who's there. Yeah.
That's so nice, man.
It's super cool.
We had people like when I was busking in college, we had people throwing like lit cigarettes at us and stuff. They're like, this is our fucking spot.
Oh really? Yeah.
Like
shit.
We've been here for 10 years. You know, this
must have been a gold mine then, a moneymaker, huh?
Must have been. I wouldn't know. I would never know now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But so tell me a bit about the background. So like, when did you start playing guitar and how did you get into the style that you play? And,
I was just like all the time, super interested in like my dad's CDs and everything like that. It's a little bit cliche, the story.
I was the same,
but
no,
I really was kind of like pulling all the CDs out, reading the lyrics and then playing the songs, like loads of James Taylor.
Man, that was my
first,
jam.
Like, I was like, God, this guy's like an angel, you know?
Yeah.
And I would often like have the CD Walkman there in the yes. bed. As I was going to sleep, I'd have James Taylor.
And, yes.
And it, my mum would always say to me, you better watch with those headphones in your sleep. You know, in case like they harm you. I'm like, Mum, I'm not a baby, you know? But yeah, and then I realized obviously I wasn't going to get to the James Taylor level, but just there and then. But
I was going to say, like, not just there, but you know, maybe a few years.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But and then I kind of obviously, like, growing up as a teenager, Oasis were a massive influence on me because...
Well, we have to stop you there and say we did see a photo of you with Liam Gallagher. Yeah, we have to know the story behind that.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was crazy, man. That was like... This was in the Camden era, and we were kind of... So me and my friend Joe and Craig were in a band there called A Band Named King. And that was...
Band Named King.
We were originally like the Tracys or something, and then we changed into A Band Named King. And we were... We were just like going out every night in Camden with the guitar on the back, and then in the smoking areas or anything, if anybody wanted a song or asked for it, then we would play our songs to them.
Oh, nice.
And we just said, it's going to happen like this. And then we were just like writing under bridges and all the rest of it. And then one evening we were out in a nightclub, and it was like super quiet on a Monday night or something. And like, I was like, hey, Craig, Liam Gallagher's in the corner, man. And we had it was crazy. And he was like, and Craig's, he's a go-getter, man. Like, he's a proper nice guy. He's a cool kid. But he also speaks his mind and stuff. And he was like, where?
I'm like, fuck
him. I was like, oh, no, this is going to end in tears, you know?
Oh, man. And then that one friend.
And then he went over to him and started the initial conversation, because I was a little bit kind of standing back a bit and thinking, God, you know.
I mean, if there's any like extremely famous people in the world, the Gallaghers are known for like, don't talk to them. They're not nice. Probably, right?
Yeah. And he went over to him and said, he said like probably one of the worst words, I think. He was like, you're a C and I'm a C. That means we can get along, right? We can get along. And I thought, uh-oh, he's going to...
What's your C and I'm a C?
Well, he like said this really bad word.
Oh, that one. Yeah, oh, the C word.
I don't want to say it because obviously children might be listening.
I hope not.
But
he just said it like that. Like,
he went far out, said it. And I was like, oh, no, I'm going to have to pick him up off the floor. And then before you know it, they were like, had the arms around each other and they were having a beer. And it stopped there. I said, right, okay, let's get a quick photo, because we were quite happy that he was there.
It's probably your only chance ever.
We left the club, went to like get fish and chips or something. We were like happy with our night then. We were like, hey, it's done. Let's go home, you know? Yeah. And then he walked past the chip shop again.
You're kidding.
And like he either like stole one of our chips or something, or he like knocked on the window or something, and he was like messing around. And then I then said, okay, now it's my turn. So I went out and said, hey, like, where are you going now? What's the plan? What's the deal? I mean, can me and this guy be involved? You met him in the club. and the house party was next door to the fish and chip shop, and he said, go in and behave. And that's what he said to us. So
what?
Then we partied the night away there, and yeah, it was crazy.
Man, that's like a rock and roll legend story or something.
It's really, like, I take that one to the grave,
yeah,
man.
That's like a Rolling Stone exclusive kind of thing. But it's also like Mo's wet dream, because he's such an Oasis
fan. Yeah, and I think, like, just going back to what you said about the kind of influences there, like, Noel Gallagher, for me, as like this kind of guitar player, singer-songwriter, from an early age said... made me believe that I could do that, because, you know, he wasn't doing any crazy stuff on the guitar.
Right.
The melodies, you thought you'd maybe heard some of them a little bit before, and mm-hmm. it was quite easy, very accessible, no, to kind of learn everything. And then I was like, hey, I'm going to give this a go myself, you know?
Yeah, man. When you hear like a fresh interpretation of like a comfortable melody, you're mm-hmm. like, oh, you know what? That's not so scary to try and do my own.
Of course, yeah.
Man, mm-hmm. that really changed it for me too. Like, I was really into James Taylor, and when I was around like teenager, my dad, you know, showed me Zeppelin and Queen and you know, Bread and Boston and all these classic rock bands. And it always seemed like something very far away from what I could do. I was interested in music. I was just starting with guitar, but that wasn't even on my radar of like things I considered trying to copy. And then one day, I was a really late bloomer with Bob Dylan.
Okay, yeah. I mean, a little bit like that also. Yeah.
You know, almost everyone has like a little Bob Dylan story who writes songs like in close to our genre, but it's that changed everything because it was like, man, those are the chords I already know. That's great.
If
I think of an interesting way to phrase what I want to say, then that's the magic.
That's it. Yeah. But it's quite interesting when you kind of, for example, Dylan or Cohen or something like that, then you realize how bloody good it actually is when you actually just try and, today I'm going to write something a little bit Dylan-y and just keep it super easy and see what's going to happen. Eventually you're like writing something that's going off in another direction.
Yeah.
And to keep it there with like lyrical content that is that good.
Man.
Just like, it's Paco, you know?
He's one of those guys too where, you know, it's been like 60 years since he started writing songs or something crazy. And or I don't know, 50 years. And then you sometimes hear a song from a modern artist or modern-ish and you think, oh, that's a great track. That's really nice. And you find out that it's a cover from some estranged early 90s Dylan track that was unreleased crazy, or something. And you're like, this guy's still writing hits. How?
It's mad.
It's insane.
Didn't Adele covered one of his songs, no?
Right, yeah.
What was it called again?
I don't remember.
No, I forgot the name.
We're about to fact check that. I love this new fact check system we got here.
It's just a computer, Jordan.
I never saw that before. Is it like a big calculator?
Make You Feel My Love.
Make You Feel My Love, yeah. I think a few people covered this one, but that's just like one of those 80s, 90s Dylan songs, right? That's crazy. But so you were playing music and you had this style growing and you went to Liverpool and you were busking and playing for the Hat and then so one night this German actress shows up. So did you recognize her? Like how did this
no
work out?
No way. This was like, I mean, for me it holds holds a massive place in my heart, the whole story about what happened, because. Yeah, it was coming at a time in Liverpool where things were coming to a bit of a kind of dangerous point and I was not really enjoying the thing so much anymore. Like I was just kind of, it was like hell to leather, you know? It's like really kind of just going, just on a kind of bit of a downward spiral. And I was kind of living in this hostel at the time. And to which, by the way, the guy at the hostel, Raquel, amazing guy, he like was taking in all the musicians and we were all in like the hostel rooms. Anyways,
that's so nice.
So I was kind of like busking. It was like on a Saturday night, just playing music on the street, maybe 1 a.m. or something. And it was just super quiet. And this woman approached me with her daughter and had just said, hey, can my daughter take some photos of you? Who I later found out was Lulu, her daughter's cool girl also. And then she just asked for my email address. And I, as you do, like also at concerts as well sometimes, you know, when you're playing, someone says, hey, what's your email address? You hope it's going to be, something interesting. But most of the time it's just a birthday or
a wedding.
And
actually, I just realized for the German listeners that we haven't said the name yet. It was Merit Becker.
Yeah. Right. Merit Becker, yeah.
Crazy.
And she asked me for the email and then I didn't hear from her for a certain amount, maybe about 4 to 6 months or something. I didn't hear from her, from the email address. And I'm thinking, it was always in my head, like, that was pretty strange, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I had the email, which was, hey, I'm Merit. And then the email address had her name in it, Merit Becker. And I Googled her. And then I was like, I knew I had a feeling that something was around me at the time. It's very strange. And I don't want to go too kind of like vibey with it, but I was in a pretty bad stage in my life, and mm-hmm. I kind of see it like it was some sort of like angel.
Man, but sometimes those moments do really stick with people.
Yeah. And yeah, then email after email, back and forth, and then she invited me to be in her band for like...
Now, see, that to me is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's so unexpected.
Yeah, I mean,
To see a lot of talent and to share like mm-hmm. a lot of like just human kindness with you and give you an uplift and to make mm-hmm. you feel like, okay, I know it's a hard time now, but there is something more for me
mm-hmm.
is already enough for any musician in that position.
Yeah.
But then I mean, for her to say like, by the way, yeah, I've got a 25 city tour coming up. That's amazing.
And it was quite funny because I was, after the first email came through, then I had like all the crew at the hostel behind the computer because we're all using the same computer. And I'm like looking at the computer going, hey, everybody, come here a minute. And like we're all checking and everyone's like, for a month or so, what do you think it's going to be? And this and that. And there was like huge debates about it.
That's so cool. That's exciting.
Yeah. And then came the thing, would you be willing to do backing vocals in my band? And could you commit to these dates with a huge list of dates?
So I know that she's a successful actress, but so has she always played music or how, what kind of style does she play?
I was touring an album called Snowflakes for Breakfast.
Snowflakes for Breakfast.
And she's a super interesting musician. Because that was my introduction to her, then I look at her like a musician.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Whereas I think, I personally think she needs a bit more credit for the music because I see the work that goes into it and the thought process and how things are made on stage and how we do things and rehearse it. And it's a really kind of solid show with a lot of details. And she does things super quiet, but when you're like standing on stage and you see the full theater, just like completely silent.
Oh.
It's like killer, you know?
I love that.
And yeah. I just like, after the time with the story and kind of being involved, I just grew to like love her material, you know?
Sure, yeah. But it means more to you.
Yeah. And the people in the band were also kind of taking me under the wing. I mean, I was like 28 or something at the time. No, 27. And they were all like kind of older, kind of reaching like the 40, 45 mark.
Okay.
They'd been around the globe, most of them, with music, you know? And there comes this like rookie from the street asking about like monitors and learning a lot as well.
Were they all German?
Yeah, they were all German. Yeah.
How many players did she have on the road?
In this particular program, it was Typhoon Schultzke on drums, Buddy Saha on guitar, Christiana Holmstein, vocals, Olivia Ulig. Yeah, there was like five and Merritt. Yeah.
And what did she bring you on to do?
I was doing backing vocals with the...
Amazing, man.
With the other two ladies there who were also teaching me a lot of things. Cause,
yeah, sure. I mean, building harmonies and stuff and learning different arrangements.
Because I turned up to the rehearsals, right, just off the plane from Liverpool. Like, I don't know what I'm going into.
Fresh meat, yeah.
You know, I'm like really...
That's crazy to me.
But it was just like, I couldn't have written the dream if I tried, you know.
I was telling Mo earlier when we researched that it sounds like one of those, I don't know. My only perspective would be like it sounds one of those like American dreams sort of things. Like he came from nothing.
Yeah, you know? A little bit. But the great thing was what I really admired about it about the whole thing was because I was thinking when I come to Berlin. I mean, we're not going to get paid from the tour dates for a little space of time. We have to rehearse for 2 weeks and thinking about, what about a place to live and stuff? And she said, you just live with my mum. So I just lived with her mother,
oh my God.
Monica Hansen, who's also a like a very cool actress and yet also a super down to earth woman. And I'm just like walking around her beautiful apartment, just playing records and
man, that's such a crazy situation. So you had 2 weeks to rehearse, 25 cities. Were the cities all in Germany?
All in Germany. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was 20.
No, so it was like, it wasn't, it was, so it was like, as you probably know yourself, it's like a block of eight and then maybe 4 days off or something. And then we would, maybe the next month there would be a certain amount also.
Right.
So it was going to like, I was like going to all these small German cities, just thinking, this is crazy. That's going to like playing in like Minden and places like this and Rautlingen and all the other places.
I expected Jordan to ask, are there even 25 German cities?
I mean, there's not. Obviously, he's wrong. But I don't want to insult the guest, Mo. And, were you guys on a Nightliner or were you in different
We were
different
on a Nightliner for kind of the later stages. Because I then, after that tour block, mm-hmm. which like spread out over a space of time, then there was also like 4 or 5 bookings coming in this month or whatever. And it continued. So I was in the band for close to 3 years.
That's unbelievable, man.
And then we were on the Nightliner sometimes or this or that. And it was all super new to me. So I was like kind of, I mean, there was like this, they make fun of me a little bit because the first show in, where was it? In Leverkusen at the Scala Club. And, after the show, I'm thinking, I don't know what's going on with like accommodation. And I just did not want to ask any questions in case I got sent home, you know?
Right, exactly. You don't want to be the problem or stick out.
So I'm just like going with the flow. I originally said to her, hey, can I bring the guitar on the bus? Because I want to do some busking in the cities in the day. She was like, no, leave the guitar, you know?
Actually, you're out of the van.
And I was like asking one, Christiana in the band, I was like asking her, hey, do we pay for the hotels and this and that? I was really like...
paying for the hotel for all of us.
And she sat there and said, David, we need to go and drink a beer. I'm going to tell you everything.
Oh, and that's
then she,
nice.
Yeah,
that's
she
nice.
Was really... Then I was in the pool the next morning, like with the dressing gown on and the green tea and stuff.
I've totally been in that situation before where you feel like over your head, you feel super like imposter syndrome. Mm. It's like way too lucky to be where you are in the moment.
Yeah, yeah, a little
you don't
bit
wanna,
like that.
You don't
yeah.
want to bring anyone's attention to the fact that you don't belong there.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
So,
yeah.
you know, you ask like really dumb questions on the side to like the door guy or like the driver. You're like, by the way, I mean, they told me, but I forgot. Do you know, do
yeah,
I?
Yeah.
Are meals paid for or is that a...
Where are we eating tonight?
My Google Maps broke down. Man, that's such an interesting situation. So you toured like off and on with her about 3 years. So
about 3 years and then... and then kind of just remain super good friends with her and all the people in the band. And whenever anything's happening, and sometimes I do the odd show with her now when it's like a different thing.
So throughout that, were you saving the money from the shows to put towards something else, or were you like?
Well, for me at the time, because I was then coming from Liverpool and it was getting towards the end of that story there, because I was kind of like, I was thinking that a change needs to happen soon and pretty fast, you know, because I was thinking the winters are tough with the street music and no bookers or anything like that were really listening to me there or anything like that. Not ones that would like maybe make a difference anyway, you know. And then when I was getting like paid from the shows and stuff, I was just like kind of living in some sort of dreamland. I was like,
because
especially when you're in a new city and Berlin, once you find your feet there, you can really start taking off, you know?
Oh man, Berlin is just like this plethora of things to do and there's a buzz and you know, it's like.
Cause I was living in Schöneberg when I first arrived there. And I wasn't really venturing much further than rehearsals at Merritt's place and then coming back and then chilling out. I was thinking, everyone's saying like Berlin's this like crazy, vibrant place. I'm yet to see it, you know, like, so I decided to go down to like Warschau Straße, and then I was like, ah, oh, okay.
This
and
is
then,
what's up.
I was like, okay, there's another there's another place where you can go. I was like, Neukern and then Kreuzberg. And then I was,
yeah.
Then I was really like, I had no problem then kind of getting on with things, you know.
So as soon as the tour ended, that's where you migrated to. You said, now the tour's done, I'm going to stay in Berlin.
For me, it was always clear that when I was speaking to people in Berlin, compared to kind of the UK, let's say, and also back home, it's like people were taking their art as their work. Mm-hmm. Obviously, some teaching on the side or something like that. But the main focus every day was either someone's album, film, or light shows or something like that. And absolutely. I just thought, hey, I want to be amongst this, man.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
And I think that's what's going to get the best out of me. And then when I found out in Berlin there was a session you could play at every night with an attentive audience, I really like found myself like growing as a performer then and thought, hey, this is fucking great, you know?
Yeah.
Because nobody...
The challenge is on, the
yeah, and
is
and you're like seeing... Also, like I think people think, you know... When you play at an open stage or you have a jam with someone and someone's maybe not musical, artistic, and they're into other things, they say, hey, he was really good. Does that bother you that you're going on after that person?
Yeah.
And you're like, no, it's like great to be around it because it makes you step up your game.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Dig the heels in and sing like from the heart. So
yeah.
I thought Berlin's the place for me. I just thought, no, that's it. Tour dates or no tour dates, I'm here.
It takes a good city, I think, to challenge yourself and to kind of like keep you on your toes.
Yeah, about,
like,
yeah, definitely.
Okay, I need to be rehearsing way more. I need to be
exactly,
doing
yeah.
like vocal warm-ups mm-hmm. before concerts or however you feel like you better yourself. I think it takes a certain kind of city to put you in that mindset.
Of course, yeah. I think it's... And I still go back there quite a lot. I'm working with like my new band down there in Berlin with Martin Bach and Mona Kaides.
I do want to get to that.
Okay.
Just
okay.
before we leave the long tour,
yeah.
Like I just wanted to think about throughout that time when you're going around Germany with this actress and this band that you just met.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I know that it was a bit of a twilight like dream situation. Mm-hmm. But were you ever thinking, like, were you ever getting involved with any sort of drama with anybody, or were you feeling homesick at all, or were you just happy to be there and rolling with it? Or how was that feeling, you know?
Yeah.
Just being in a new country for the first time.
Yeah, it was, I mean, because after the tour dates, when things calmed down a little bit and say there wasn't another tour date for, say, a month
right.
or something, then you're kind of toying around with the idea, hey, and it's also winter. Yeah, you're also like, hey, do I go home? But then you're scared to miss out on all the other things.
Yeah.
So I was also playing music on the street in Berlin when I wasn't touring.
Okay. Oh, so that's where her house was?
In Berlin, yeah.
Ah, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
And then that was a little bit different then. That was like maybe the little downside also then, because I wasn't earning as much money as I was in Liverpool.
Right.
In Berlin. Because there was like the major spots, everyone had a super decent amp mm-hmm. and they were like blowing the street apart with the sound.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of jumping on friends' amps from time to time, but you're super limited with your time because there's always a musician after you. And at the time, I think it was like a one hour kind of time to go in, make your money and get out, you know?
Okay, wow.
But yeah, it was, sometimes it was cold. It was a little bit.
Germany gets real cold. Gets real cold.
Sometimes it was a little bit.
And it's super windy.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. I was underneath in the U-Bahns quite a lot. Not on the train, but on the platform there.
Playing there.
Yeah, yeah. And
that's a nice spot.
And it was like, I wrote loads of songs there.
I can imagine.
It's like people walking
all
by.
Walks of life and like the city buzz feeling and.
But I also, I kind of like really enjoy that feeling. I like enjoy feeding off this. Okay, you're in the city by yourself. All you've got tonight, you know, you've obviously got a few friends and this and that. That's cool, but you don't want to bother people every night of the week, you know? So
right.
I always like kind of thrive off that thing of this like new environment, guitar and you, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then, okay, you make...
Let's keep it fresh.
You earn this amount, and then you go for a walk and see if you can find anywhere new. And it was always super inspiring to meet all the people also, you know?
What's the most street performances you did in a night, you think? Like different locations, maybe that's easier.
God, I would like some nights in Berlin, I would be going out at 6 in the evening and then coming back at like close to like, because the U-Bahns run all weekend there, no?
Oh, right.
So like the traffic of the people, the ravers are coming back. Also, oh. they're changing club from like whatever time, 12 or something. So it's always like people sitting down next to you. And someone's just sparking a joint and you're just playing songs to them, you know?
That's
and
nice.
It, when it gets like that, I was like, God, I love being away from home. You know?
Sure. Yeah.
I've never been much of a smoker in that sense or like zenning out too much like that. But I was loving like feeding off of that. And, yeah. And these people are having a great night. They're moving somewhere else. And
yeah.
I found the people super open and interesting. And
man, that's great. That's yeah. really great. So you stayed there, and then how did you meet Martin Bach? And is it Carey's, Mona Carey's, or Kyrie's?
Kyrie's.
Kyrie's.
Kyrie's, yeah.
So how did you come across these two? Because now you're in this songwriting trio with them, right?
Yeah, yeah. So now I was originally sharing a rehearsal space with Martin, the drummer in the band.
He was the drummer for Merritt.
No. So Martin and Mona... are kind of away from the Merritt story. They're not really linked.
So oh, okay.
I was renting a rehearsal space from Martin and he was a drummer and
oh, okay.
and I was just doing the singer-songwriter thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of said, hey, maybe we should do something at some point. It was just like a talky thing and I was playing a friend's birthday party and I played a few songs and then Mona and Martin had got in touch with me and said, hey, should we try and make something happen?
So and, where did Mona come from in this?
So she's actually Martin's partner.
And ah,
so
okay.
they're together. And
does she sing or does she?
Yeah, she plays keys, sings, and she's also a flute player. But
triple threat.
We yet to hear the flute, but I try and encourage her to do that.
You haven't heard the flute yet?
No, but I've heard her play it. But
I need to hear a flute solo on this next record.
I'd be super up for it, but they kind of came at me and we spoke about a few things and got some things moving and it was also like quite a new thing for me because I was we were joining as a trio so we're writing all the songs together and everything is like feels like a well-oiled machine. It's pretty cool and I haven't really been a part of something like this to date.
So this is the first kind of band.
This is like I've been in a lot of bands and obviously done like the solo thing for a long time, but this thing feels a little, well, it's a lot more organized,
yeah.
for example, and it has three different opinions coming in.
I was gonna say because like are all three of you contributing to the songwriting itself?
Yeah, we're okay. all kind of. We kind of like, we don't jam it out, but Mona might throw something at me with the chords and then I sing some melodies over the top and then mm-hmm. Martin obviously comes in with the drums and then we discuss it together and move it around and figure out what's best for the song.
That's awesome.
But we're super quick at writing songs. And
what's the style in general?
I would say,
or does it
well,
shift
it's
around
like, I'm trying to keep it as kind of close to what I believe in as possible. So like, I'm trying to keep it like rootsy and I'm trying to speak the truth.
House, trends, electronic.
Because it all starts with the kind of this street singing thing, you know? Like
right.
I like to kind of raise my voice a bit and like,
push
like,
the chords out.
I like to be heard a bit. And
yeah. That's good training for that, street singing.
Yeah, hey man, it's super.
Fuck,
sometimes even when you're playing in the concert, they're like, hey man, like.
Dude, the house is up. You can chill.
Yeah. chill out on the microphone. But I think we have super, super strong songs and...
How many songs have you guys written already?
We're on about 12 at the moment.
It's a full record, man.
We like wrote the record, we worked it out the other week. So we often, well, we've been four times to like, we go to like these little places in like North Germany and we hire out a bungalow or something. Mm-hmm. And then the last one we were in Wollin, and it's also north of Berlin. And yeah, we hire the place out for 4 or 5 days. And then go and do the work, you know?
I love that, man.
And like the productive vibes that were coming out of there was unbelievable. And we just figured that this is really working and we're going to put some more work into it. And now we're like, before we know it, we kind of getting towards the end of completion now for Takeoff, you know?
Man, I remember in New Orleans, you know, it was always, practices with bands were always in someone's living room or in someone's attic or something. And for me, sometimes we would rent out these rehearsal spaces or something. And I would get the most creative there, I think, being in a, like in an alternate environment where you're not quite feeling at home, but you're with people that you trust and you can kind of bounce things off a wall that you don't care if it works or not. It's, you know, you can throw things to see if they stick.
Yeah, yeah.
And for some reason, different environments affect how the rehearsals go, that in my opinion, I think. Yeah. And something I always really wanted to do, or something that I was kind of jealous of when I see certain bands online, is when they've rented out a place, like a new fresh place, mm-hmm. like you did with this bungalow or something, mm-hmm. or when I see Kevin Parker renting out like this cabin house on the beach. I mean, that's millionaires okay, do, yeah, but yeah, yeah. You know, just seeing some cabin somewhere. Like the dream for me is when you hear about like Bon Iver going out to some cabin
it's crazy.
And sitting by himself. And you know, he's a genius and stuff. I don't know, I'd create something even a fraction as good, but just being somewhere different, separated from your home, separated from your work, mm-hmm. separated from the things you know, and isolating either yourself with your mates or isolating yourself with just your instruments.
Yeah.
And something I really want to do.
Man, we just find that, you know, you're waking up in the morning and it's also like a proper like communal thing as well, because you're all having breakfast together.
Yeah.
And whoever might be there, Simon Steger might be there, who's producing the album, and he might set up the microphones on the first day, make sure everything's going, because they're always recording the sessions as well. Mm-hmm. You're having breakfast together, go and crack out the tunes for as long as you can go. Lunch.
Team building.
Mini nap, and then the coffee, and then in for the second thing.
Yeah.
But, my partner, Julia Zantel, we were kind of sitting down and listening to kind of some music of mine, and she was always like pushing me to, hey, I think, you know, I think your voice can do a little bit more than that, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, yeah, but the neighbors and this and that, because I was trying to take it high and kind of falsetto and mm-hmm. all the rest of it. And the band were the first people that I was trying that thing with to kind of have this release. And I was always just feeling a little bit embarrassed doing it in someone's house or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
And we just, and then that's what led to the kind of this renting a space and saying, hey, no one's around, dig your heels
in. Let go.
And just like, and it really worked, man. It was like,
that's beautiful.
Killer. It was killer, yeah.
That's such a cool feeling when you can finally let go and just try something and it works and it feels good.
Because initially you don't really want to believe, if you feel that you've written a song and you believe it's kind of good enough to go out there,
mm-hmm.
I've got heaps of songs, you know, heaps of things that I was kind of throwing to the band. And they're like, mate, let's try some different things. And then, and then when you find this little explosive thing, because it's also new for me to venture into this area. And you find it with good people around you, it's like killer.
It's really funny when you're working with a band on new songs. It's instantly obvious when one is going to work well. It's funny, like everyone has their idea within a few minutes, and other songs can be great but need more work. But it's funny when you find this like instant connection with your bandmates about a song, like,
it's just like everyone's nodding whilst you're playing, everyone's like nodding the head around.
It's like, what are we making here? And you're laughing, and I love that.
I'm often saying like, this is gonna be big.
This is the one. So you guys were writing a lot of songs together, and actually one of these songs ended up being an award-winning song called Raise the Bar. Let's take a little listen to this song.
Raise the bar. This is a little
So you guys won the European Songwriting Contest. So, you know, this was for a documentary about refugees, right? Or how did this work out?
No, this was so basically it leads onto this this next part. But Mona, she was sitting down and was deciding, hey, I'm going to enter some songs into this European Songwriting Award thing. Mm-hmm. And she entered, yeah, a couple of songs that she had written with various other projects, and I guess to keep the kind of options open, though. And,
yeah.
Yeah, and then we had this kind of, it was quite funny because we had this like bit of excitement before the awards thing actually happened, because the people from the awards had announced that Mona is going to be a finalist in the music for motion picture in this section.
What?
And we're trying to get a hold of the people saying like, hey, you know, like, what song is this? Because I'm kind of on the other end of the phone thinking I might have to drive down to Frankfurt here to go to the final. And, but they were super busy and they turned out to be super nice people. But they were so busy that obviously a kind of an applicant emailing them was at that time, it was like one day before or 2 days before the finals or something. So I was like, hey, screw this, man. I'm going to drive to Frankfurt just on the off chance that it could be our song. And it turned out to be, yeah, Raise the Bar. And
holy
and
shit.
And then me and Mona, it was super. We were like sitting there and we were thinking, I mean, music for a motion picture. I mean, you know, you just, wow. you can't put it together sometimes. And these two like great, like Lord of the Rings vibe tunes were played before us.
Oh, really?
In the ceremony, like they played 45 seconds of each song.
Mm-hmm.
And then Raise the Bar was like after it. And me and Mona were like, no chance.
Shit.
No chance.
It's like two big orchestral compositions.
Well, yeah, they were kind of like from composers. One was from Italy, I think. One was from Switzerland or something like that. And
even more like imposter syndrome.
And I was like, like God, I was like, I don't know. But we'd always like imagined that it might be for some kind of film because it tells like quite a nice story. And it's, mm-hmm. Raising the bar in itself is like a proper positive thing to do. You know? So we always thought there could be something behind it. And yeah, and they announced our names and we were like, whoa, and then we were jumping up on stage. And yeah, it was a little bit surreal. And then, yeah, and then we released the song with them and now it's out into the world, yeah.
Oh, unbelievable, man. And I know a little bit about the efforts it took to shoot the music video for it, but I would love to hear your story about this.
Oh, man. I actually have my partner, Julia, to thank for this because she was working with Sebastian at the time, the filmmaker. And she was like, hey, let's see if Sebastian's up for it. Maybe he wants to make something. I was like, yeah, well, maybe we might have to go to Lisbon. So we ended up going to Lisbon to shoot the video.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the first scene was like an underwater scene for...
And you were in the Atlantic Ocean.
We were in the ocean. And obviously, Julia had come up with like this idea of, yeah, being kind of trapped underwater and having things around you and pictures and all of this kind of thing. And we were trying to create it. And then we were in the water for so long and it was like, we had like weights around our waist. We were like trying to stay under.
That's really my nightmare.
And it was comical in the end, but you know, you just don't know these things sometimes till you try them. So, but it was like, it wasn't a negative thing. It was like, it actually set us off to shoot really well and shoot productively and, working with Sebastian was like a bit of a dream as well. He's super easy guy to work with. And then it was like this super happy thing was going on around everyone on the shoot. And it was only uphill from there.
And you did the whole video in one day? Or
we done it in one day. I think at the end of it, recalculated 14 hours or something.
Man, that's unbelievable.
And there was a running scene in there also, I have to add. So I had to run on the last 2 hours of the the shoot.
Yeah, like, I'd rather be back weighted underwater.
Yeah. I was thinking, get me back in there, you know?
Man, it must have been freezing. I've been in the Atlantic Ocean once, and it's just an ice chamber.
Well, at first, it was like, you know, taking a picture of the yacht we were on. And it's like, I was sending one to my mum.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, mum, I'm shooting a music video.
I made it.
Lisbon. Yeah, here we go, you know. No champagne yet, though. One of those things. Like. And then, after half an hour, I was like, Sebastian, are you okay? Are you okay? It looks like you're hyperventilating.
I can't even begin to think about having weights on my body with a camera on my shoulder under the ocean current.
The thing with him, because he had to, like, obviously capture it.
Yeah.
So I was getting, like, the longer straw, and just jumping out from time to time. And he was always trying to check out what's going on down there.
Man.
And then we, like, but you learn from it, no? And like... Yeah, it was super fun.
But how did you get up? That's the one.
So we had like a crew on the boat who were advising us. Yeah, maybe here's to go where to jump in. The current isn't so bad, and we put the rope out, and then someone was ready to jump in if something was getting a bit too much.
That's good.
And
that's good.
We were in safe hands there, and like an amazing little crew, and we ended up having the boat for double the time that we were supposed to have it.
And oh,
it
that's nice.
Really helpful. And it was, it was quite a scene to be involved in.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. So when the song won the best motion picture song, is it in a film? Like,
the kind of prize for it. There was like a main prize for the event. It was like the songwriter pop section.
Mm-hmm.
And they had kind of other sort of crazy prizes. But our prize was promotion for the single and a free release. And then we were also invited to the Berlin Songwriting Convention.
Oh, that's cool.
In a few weeks.
It's a few weeks from now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
No, sorry. It's not a few weeks. I think it's the 11th of December.
And you're going with Martin and
Martin. Then we go with the together, and we kind of get like some sort of like free pass, in the sense of we get to have a little chat with a few people in a separate room, or we can actually kind of pitch a few things to people because we're kind of involved with the people that are making the convention.
It'd be kind of crazy if you won this award and then they put you into a private room with like major songwriting celebrities, the hologram of Michael Jackson.
But again, I think it's like
Peter Gabriel. Yeah. It's like, this is the elite. I'm here, guys. I made it.
Because I think that I'm in particular, I'm not so good at those things where it's like, hey, here's the messer. Sell yourself. No, so I'm rather trying to be myself rather than sell myself.
Yeah, that's a good motto.
And then sometimes, if I want to be myself, then maybe I'm not like branching out like this. Yeah, how are you? What do you do? And this and that. I need like a little fork up the ass to push me in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of helps. But again, I think it's everything with like a pinch of salt in the industry. You know, you have to.
Yeah.
Just see what happens on the day.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That should be really exciting, though.
I think so, yeah. Really, there's cool. A great story behind it, and I think that's the main thing. And if anything else comes, it's a positive one.
You're full of fucking good stories, man. I'm
a killer, yeah.
I guess I just really want to touch on, so you guys have this album of new songs. Do you have a drop date or an idea of when you'd want to?
No, but we kind of Raised the Bar was the first single that is out and... that was out in September, and then we have a live music video coming out on December the 4th or 5th.
Okay.
And then we release the next single kind of just before Christmas.
Okay.
And then we have to look at a few things, and as you probably know, you have to see how things go as you go along. We don't know who wants to get involved yet.
Exactly.
We're kind of new on the block, and we think we've got a lot in the traps.
You get a loaded chamber.
So we're kind of we're not rushing into anything, but we're doing a lot of work behind the scenes, making it happen and believing in it.
Yeah. I think for me, probably the most tedious, but for me, also the really fun part is when all of the creative part of the music is finally done. For me, that's a big weight off my shoulders. Like, it's done. Okay.
I don't have to think
about that anymore. But now it comes the part of like designing the artwork, getting the photography, getting the, you know, promotional plan set in place, the budget and the strategy and getting everything, like doing the like the math of it afterward. For me, it's like, okay, hey, the music's done. The music's
it's set. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, now I'm just going to add some salt. This and that. And that for me is, I enjoy that part.
Yeah, it's good. But it's also quite new to me. And that's why I'm kind of really happy to have met Martin and Mona and the team that we have around us. We have like a small team and it seems to be like, like there's this couple of people joining every 6 months or something. And there's like, okay, now we have like a light guy.
Yeah.
And now that's like cool. These things are happening. And I seek advice from them and I go along with the story as it's unfolding.
Seems like you always have a good close-knit family following you around for support.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're a magnet to that kind of group.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't want to jinx it.
Yeah, just zip it. Yeah.
Do you guys have like a special group name for this album? Like, are you going under a different project name?
No, it's going to be a David Gaffney album.
Okay.
And I think that that's the way that we're going to go forward. And
cool.
I think that there's not really any egos in the band as such. And we all recognize that pretty much straight away and realize
that's most important.
We know we want this for the good. And it's, we're all putting in good effort. And I think we're onto something.
Well, my friend, I think all my questions have been answered. Mo, do you have anything else on the top of your mind before we do our last little segment here?
No, Jordan. I'm totally happy to witness this conversation. I'm even more looking forward to our last little segment.
All right. We've got three very satisfied men in this room. So now comes a little game we're going to end here with.
Okay. David. I'm nervous.
So this game is called
Grand Statements.
And the way this works is we would like you to imagine that you're God for a day.
Okay.
Everyone hears what you can say from the skies. Everyone in the world can hear one thing that you can say from the heavens, raining down upon them. What do you say?
Be fucking nice.
Well said. Yeah. Absolutely agree with that. Amen. God. And actually there's that one phrase you said earlier of, be yourself, don't sell yourself. And I really think that's the mantra. That should be the title of the episode, I think. So with that in mind, do you want to plug your new releases and your links and stuff for the listeners?
Just while I kind of off recording, cause I don't know the actual release date of the things yet. I don't know.
Just put your website or Instagram or how do you want people to find you?
Yeah. Okay. So hit David Gaffney on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, Apple, all your usual stations and come say hello.
Well, David, Mo and I are very thankful that you were an artsy-fartsy immigrant with us today. You have the official stamp from
us. I'm happy to be one.
We have to get an actual stamp.
We really should get like a stamp sound like... That sounds like a gun.
No, thanks a lot for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Our pleasure, man. Thanks a lot.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Ein Podcast von Jordan Prince, produziert von Moritz Batscheider für M94.5.